The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Hello, everyone. Really glad to be with you today. Can't tell you. It feels great to be with Sangha. So this theme for Ango of being of right relationship with the world and deep gratitude. Immediately when we were talking about that, I thought of the Eightfold Path and being in right relationship with ourself. And there can't be a better way to express our gratitude than to step onto the path and to a path of well-being and to offer that to the world, be in relationship to the world and to ourself in such a way, a path that has rightness, straightness, and honesty with ourself. And really, it's just refinding what we already have, that we already have this rightness in us, and it's refinding that and refining that. So this brings us to the fourth noble truth, which is marga, the path. It's called marga. To stop doing things that cause us stress, simply put. And we got away. Like, we were given a way to stop stressing out and suffering. And I really didn't like take this in until recently. And I thought, oh, I want to talk about this because that's how I'll learn it and be able to teach it. These eight factors. And that along with that is finding our deep, true happiness. So he gave us these eightfold factors, the Buddha, and specific instructions of how to put together the raw material of our senses, how we perceive the world, and through them, how we make suffering and how to unmake it. How to unmake it. We've made it, so we can unmake it. Learn how to undo the habits of mind. What is skillful? What isn't? This takes a while, right? A lot of trial and error. What's wholesome or unwholesome? And how we cling to the familiarity of some of the things we do over and over again. And then we wonder, I know that. Why do I keep doing that? It's still giving. And so we're still trying to find what's more skillful. How do we work with that? And right concentration is kind of at the heart of it. We really need right concentration to understand that. And all of the factors seem to be strengthening our right concentration. So this is just a bit of it. Obviously, each one of these factors has a great bit of depth. This is sort of like a little nutshell of each. What is it? What is the Eightfold Path? Well, it begins with the first element, which is the first fold is right view. And in a sense, that's understanding the Four Noble Truths, that there is stress, there is suffering. And there's sometimes people quote the Buddha saying, and I've said it, the Buddha taught one thing and one thing only, suffering and the end of suffering. I don't think he taught one thing. I think he also taught happiness. And how do we find true happiness? So we have to remember that these factors are part of a path And a path is meant to go someplace, has a purpose, something strategic. We don't practice the path to arrive at a right view or any of the factors. We use the factor of right view to take us to release from suffering. Eventually, it all drops off. Or maybe better yet, to arrive at release, or we arrive at right relationship with our being, because a lot of ourselves don't get taken to release. We actually leave much of the unnecessary baggage behind as we're walking on the path. So there's a lot of ways to understand right view. And I think the best way to start is to say, right view is the understanding that there's a distinction between healthy and unhealthy ways of thinking and acting. That's having, just understanding that, that's having a right view. That there are different ways of understanding what's healthy and what's not healthy. We have thinking for well-being, and we have thinking that's stinking thinking, as Vimalasari would call it. It's to know the noble truths to be so. There are skillful and unskillful ways of doing things, and our life has shown us that, if we're paying attention. And sometimes we go for the unskillful again and again and again till we kind of tilt it a bit. So without this general background understanding of the way we behave in the world, we're really not going to have any interest in the path that's supposed to make life better, really. So we have to begin with some basic understanding that our life can get better, that we can move, we can get more skillful, that we can take joy in discerning that it's not like work, it's like joyful to find out what's skillful. And that we can get more healthy in the ways we relate, the ways we interact. The Buddha taught on many occasions our perceptions are erroneous, that most of our suffering comes from wrong perceptions. We have to ask ourselves again and again, am I sure? When we perceive something, am I sure? Is this really true? Is it absolutely true how I perceive something? Until we see clearly. Because our inaccurate or wrong perceptions will keep us from having that right view. But to acknowledge I'm not so sure, that's having a right view. I don't know. That's a right view. So we have to look deeply into our perceptions and know their source. This right view is both a cause and an effect of all the other elements of the path. Of all the other elements, this right view of right intention, of right speech, right action. So next is right intention. And this is where we set up an intention to behave in a certain way, to behave in a way that's more skillful, in a way that does not harm other beings nor ourselves. Starting first with not harming ourselves, or to begin to start not harming ourselves. So right intention is the second of these first two, which we call wisdom factors, our wisdom. And we do begin with a modicum of wisdom, or we wouldn't end up here. So you did have some wisdom to recognize something going on that brought you searching to look for something to address. Something. Sometimes we don't, I didn't even know, like, really to call it suffering. Like, things were upsetting and wrong, but I didn't know that that was like a noble truth, like that everyone had this to start off with. It took a while to get that, actually, in practice. So to just ask, like, what am I doing? Like, when something, we're doing something, what am I doing? Is this habit energy? How do I know? Does it bring a deeper happiness in what I'm doing and how I'm behaving? Does it bring calm, less fear, raise bodhicitta, a mind of love to cultivate understanding for ourselves, to bring something better for ourselves and for others, bodhicitta? That's how we might know. So we start with a modicum of wisdom that can impact our intention in our daily life. Right intention is being in accord with right view. And these are the wisdom factors. Now, the next three path factors have to do with ethics. And the Pali word is the sila. So some of you have received the sila, the precepts, the moral and ethical teachings, how we interact with others. And this is where right speech, right action, and right livelihood come in. To what extent do our words and our deeds and our livelihood actually cause harm to other people or help or to ourselves? The Buddha has us use this reflection on each factor as a way of developing honesty. To what extent is the effect of our deeds, of our behavior? For the Buddha, the prime virtue, that's T-H-E, the prime virtue is the virtue of truthfulness. Honesty with ourself. Not so easy. Not so easy. That if we can admit certain things to ourself that we need to be honest about, there's going to be huge blind spots in our mind. I remember one time, I don't know why this just popped in, but there was a woman in the food line at the monastery. And she was, every time she came to a dish, she was like, "What's in this? What's in this? Can I eat this?" And I was fuming. I was just like, "Just eat it. You know, be grateful. Just eat it." But I realized, like, I had the same question, to be honest with myself, because I was really, like, concerned about that at one time, what I was consuming, not because I was allergic, it was some other neurosis, so it wasn't like I couldn't eat it because something bad would happen. It was just, but I was putting it all on her, and then I had to really be honest with myself. I was so mad at her because I couldn't accept that in myself. So these factors of the path press the quality of honesty on us. This right view, if we're really being honest, this right intention, if we're really being honest with ourselves, how we perceive, we have to be honest about that so we can see if it's harming or helpful. If we want to follow the path, we really do want to end suffering. Now, it's weird to say, but sometimes suffering's our mojo. We don't know who we'll be if we don't keep firing arrows and have that feeling inside of suffering. It's strange how that is, but we're so used to it. At least that's what I kind of recognize. that if I didn't bring on this feeling, I'm not used to it. I didn't know anything else because it's been there so long. So we need to look very honestly at how we're living our life and make changes, honest deliberations in what we're doing. And all of these factors work together to make it easier to sit. So then there's the right speech, which today would include texting, telephoning, emailing, twittering, and probably a slew more I don't even know about. Slacking, I mean, I don't even know. TikToking, I don't know, all of these. This is all included in right speech now. Listening is actually right speech. Just listening is right speech. And this is a very fruitful topic. It's the realm of humans is communication. And one of the ones we have the most to learn from. And of course, Buddhism shares right speech, not just in Buddhism, but in other religions and non-religions. It's just plain acting wise with our body and mind, with the puffs of air that come out of our lips, to watch it. Remember, we're all pretty loaded with missiles. So, we're stacked sometimes. So we got to watch because there's lots of triggers and it's stacked. So you got to watch because they can just go, pachew, pachew. And, you can work so hard on your anger and just one little puff could like blow it up. One little word. Do you ever have that happen? And you're like, oh, God, I shouldn't have said that. So once we launch, we can do the work of healing it. So basically, with right speech, we don't lie as much as possible. Be truthful with ourselves, other people. Try not to mislead. Avoid harsh speech and divisive speech. Speech that divides one person from another. People from other people. One person disliking another, hating another. Avoiding idle speech and gossip, which is speech that has no particular end except wasting time. And on the other side, there are aspects of speech from a Mahayana perspective where there are times to speak harshly. Circumstances under which it might be very necessary to save a life, to speak harsh. It might even be right to speak divisively if somebody is being harmful in some way. And we have to warn people from them. Sometimes gossip is useful. You know the root of gossip? Somebody told me it was gossip, but then I looked it up and it was God's sibling, the term for godparents of one's child or the parents of one's godchild. Generally very close. So that's gossip. And it was like to give them information about your culture and their social roles. But sometimes it can take on a negative spin or be in excess. But sometimes it could help with personal relationships, encourage cooperation. So we have to watch God sipping, and help. So sometimes we're involved with people who are God gossiping, and how do we act in that way when a whole group of people are doing something about someone? It's very hard to be the person that says, "Hey, I think this has gone in the wrong direction. We're now moving into harming and hurting someone. So, right speech, right action, these are in many ways not that controversial. Do not be killing, avoid stealing, committing sexual misconduct, again from the Mahayana perspective, only to do this in way if there's ways that it's actually saving lives. Should it even be considered? Killing insects or small animals. How many roaches have I done away with? I do apologize. And I know I'm doing it. And I make a choice sometimes. I don't take them outside, all of them. I'd be outside all the time. In New York. But it's not necessary all the time, but sometimes it's necessary. I remember Pema Chodron told a story that her house was infested with mice. And she was, you know, following this precept of non-killing. So she made an announcement. Mice, I'm going to have to get rid of you if you don't leave the house. It's just too much. You're overrunning, and we can't live together in such a way. So she gave them a chance, and then she extinguished them. But I was glad she wrote about that. She was very honest, and she took responsibility. So the thing is that our actions, as we know in the five remembrances, are the only things we take with us. And as I watched my brother in his life work with this, live into this, I could really see that's like, you know, when you're watching someone, that is what it comes down to. How we act. Right livelihood, similar to right action. We have to take a look at our job and our livelihood. Does it harm ourselves? Does it harm other beings? Harm that's not necessary? Because I think every job, if we really look at it, has some harm. Maybe not greatly, but harmful in small ways. Like, you know, teaching painting, I knew some of the materials were hazardous if they were poured into the sink, but we were doing good. We were doing creativity, but we had to pay attention to the materials. That was harmful. How did we dispose of them? So we have to have awareness and see, be affected by it, and what we can live with. What are we willing to be responsible for? So sometimes we have to think deeply about our work, how it impacts us. I know one of our students, Hoshin, she worked for General Electric, and they did marvelous work with parts for our body when we needed hip replacements and knee replacements. And part of her work, she was a metallurgist, so part of her work was great healing things and instruments for medical science, and some of it was for bombs. Making bombs. And she had to work with Daito Roshi quite a bit to see if she knew where she was in, and she loved her work, but just the awareness of what she was involved with. And in the Buddha's lifetime, he had a group of livelihoods that were considered wrong livelihoods, and they were very specific. Not trading in living beings, not trading in poisons, not trading in armaments or weapons, and not trading in meat. Don't be a butcher. Is anybody a butcher? I did know a butcher. Somebody in the Sangha is a butcher. Oh, yeah. And the partner's a vegetarian, so it's very interesting. I went to a retreat, and this young man was the son of the woman running the inn, and he comes to the table, and he says, this is the vegetarian fish, and it was very funny. It's like, we all went like, huh? How does that happen? Anyway. And the Buddha kept it rather specific, and he did not include, for example, being a soldier, which he could have done. And we could look at this list, if you look at it, as inspirational for ourselves to think about our own livelihood, what actions we need to be responsible for, because we are the ones that have to live it. So these two are the ethical aspects of the path. The last three are the meditative aspects of the path, where we cultivate certain kinds of states within ourselves. We have to cultivate what we have in us, or the habits that are well-worn and cause suffering will take the lead. So right effort. Right effort is where we attempt to make arise in ourselves those actions that we find to be healthy, beneficial, wholesome, skillful in the world. So we pay attention to minimize those things that make an effort to minimize those things that arise that aren't really good, that aren't really helpful, and might be tempting to keep. But we make an effort to move towards what's helpful. For example, we might find that being friendly, being patient, are healthy. They're helpful states. And when we see ourselves in that state and we feel the fluidity that acting like that brings, we keep cultivating it. We keep staying with ourselves to bring that out more and more. If we don't feel patient, don't feel friendliness or kind, we keep trying to work with those states. How do we get to the wisdom we know would bring much more happiness and well-being? If there's a state that arises that's unhelpful or unhealthy, such as hatred, greed, anger, jealousy, we come aware of it and try to minimize it. Say, yes, this has arisen. And try to relax it, stop it, calm it, not letting it run wild and proliferating, because it gives us something. We have to know that juice that we're getting from those states. And we make an effort to move us in a different relationship with ourselves, with the world. We can overdo it. We can underdo it. We can become overly righteous. We can get stiff-necked. And we can do things that make it worse, efforting too much. We can also make things worse if we're not making enough effort, if we're getting lazy and sloppy. Overly lazy, uncaring. And this all leads to right mindfulness. The second one. Right mindfulness, remembering to calm ourselves down and coming into a state of openness and receptivity, non-judgmental awareness of the world, of ourselves. So we are awareness. That's who we are. So awareness becomes aware of what's happening with the body-mind. So many of you come in and talk about things that you're doing, and I'm like, you're aware. Do you see that? Your awareness is aware of something. That is the first thing that has to happen. states we find pleasant, non-pleasant, when they happen, aware of our emotional state of mind, states of anger, when we're in states of happiness, kindness, patience, generosity. Because without awareness, we have nothing to work with. So we need to know these states to put in the effort. And this also allows us to see the changing nature of these realities. This continually changing experience. So, like many of us here today, we're focused on the breath, working with the breath in various ways to make it a good place to stay, to make it a refuge. And we can really get absorbed in that. And that takes you all the way to right concentration. So we keep staying with that breath, refreshing the mind with it and the difficulties that arise, refreshing it with the breath, bringing us to right concentration and right relationship with ourselves. Right concentration. The big problem in life is that we're causing suffering, even though we don't want to. And causing suffering in areas sometimes you'd rather deny. That's why the quality of honesty and truthfulness is so important, so we can look squarely at our actions and their actual results. And we learn to be sensitive to when we have stress, seeing how that's happening. So this is why we need to get the mind into concentration, so that our sensitivity can make the stress brighter. Zazen makes us really bright and sensitive. And the things we used to accept as normal, we begin to realize, as my favorite comedian Wanda Sykes would say, this just ain't normal. This just ain't normal. The thing we thought was normal, it's like, no, this just ain't normal. It dawns on us, wow, this really is a burden on the mind. This really is a burden on the mind. And sensing this burden, sensing that it's not necessary, we gain some freedom. We gain some freedom. And this caught my attention. I was reading this. It said, the Buddha once said, and I always said, like, I don't know. When they say the Buddha said, I'm like, he didn't write anything down. So somebody said, the Buddha said. Anyway. The Buddha once said that all the factors of the path, right concentration is the main one, and the others are accessories. Right concentration is the one we have to work at the most, to get the mind to stay with its one object, to learn not only the techniques of how to do this, but also the sense of value to remind us of why this is really important. So when we look at our life and our mind, to what extent is it actually on the path, and to what extent are we allowing ourselves to wander off into the brush? What qualities need to be developed? What qualities need to be abandoned? This is part of what the Buddha called customs of the noble ones. You're the noble ones. We're the noble ones. Being what the noble ones value. That we learn to delight, he says, in abandoning whatever we have to abandon, and to delight in developing whatever needs to be developed. That's great. Can we do that? Can we take delight in abandoning whatever needs to be abandoned? And delight in developing whatever needs to be developed. Delight in development. Maybe that's what Dogen speaks of in Zazen, being the gate of ease and joy. that we're taking delight, that awareness is like seeing what makes us suffer. And we can release it. We can release, untangle, shake loose from our delight in it, from that ease and joy of being on a path, but not making it more suffering because we see it. The path of met involves a fair amount of abandoning, doesn't it? Or letting go. So we take delight in getting our priorities straight and honoring them. What's your priority in your practice? What's your priority? I ask myself. Because if our priorities are upside down, then we might do things that are upside down. What is having right relationship with the world, with ourselves? Can we express our gratitude that we have found Marga, a path with 8 miraculous folds that we can explore? So I'd like to explore that in this ongo. These folds, that'll give me 8 talks. I'm being so strategic, which is unusual for me. And if I stay by it, it'll be a miracle. But I don't know, it's comforting to think about that. Okay, next week will be right view. What is it? Yeah. So let's do this together. Let's really look at this path of freedom, of release, and go in and like ask about it, find out about it, and take delight that you have it and can use it.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.